people don't follow the protocols. They don't wear masks. And the biggest issue of all is that people don't observe social distancing.
A South Asian coronavirus hotspot gets hotter. It's Monday, August 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a normal vote process, now a campaign issue. Domestic violence in the South Asian community, a new era of space travel, and children's books for the pandemic. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Philippines has become a COVID-19 outlier in East Asia with a runaway caseload. Local observers say it's because initial stay-at-home orders ended early and people struggle to keep social distancing despite strict rules. New reported cases spiked during the past month, leaving the archipelago with a cumulative total of about 120,000. Daily cases set a record last week at nearly 6,300. Now, cities have shut down again, threatening access to workplaces in a country where many people depend on daily labor to survive. Rona Canoy is president of the International School of CDO in the Southern Philippines.
A lot of it is because people don't follow the protocols. They don't wear masks. And the biggest issue of all is that people don't observe social distancing.
So dire is the situation in the Philippines that the United Nations and 50 nonprofit partners began carrying out a $122 million response plan to help about 5.4 million people in the country's poorest and most marginalized areas, with a focus on protecting women. Elsewhere in Southeast Asia, only Indonesia still struggles with daily COVID-19 caseload surges. Most of Northeast Asia, including the disease's apparent source China, has recovered despite isolated flare-ups. Maria Ella Atienza, political science professor at the University of the Philippines, Diliman, says stay-home orders in much of the Philippines began easing in June, before hospitals could deploy equipment and coordinate with each other to handle the disease.
Things were so bureaucratic and top-down, and when they decided to open up the economy little by little, it turned out that much of the supposed things that should have been done during the strict lockdown period have not been done.
A lot of people still fear getting tested for COVID-19 at hospitals in case they test positive. Not everyone wears a face mask in shopping malls, often because they find them uncomfortable or because they left them at home. In restaurants, diners sit bunched up at bigger tables even if the next table is only a meter away. Eduardo Araral, a Philippine native and associate professor at the National University of Singapore's Public Policy School, says crowded slum housing pushes people into the streets, basketball courts, tiny stores where air circulates better despite stay-home orders.
You cannot force poor people to just be staying inside because all the more they are congested. It makes sense for them to just be outside where there's more space.
Stay-home measures resumed this past week in Metro Manila and other parts of the country, affecting about 27 million of the country's 109.5 million population. Public transport has noticeably slowed, making it hard for even medical staffers to reach their jobs. Prolonged shutdowns will keep poorer people away from work too long, says Rajiv Biswas, Asia-Pacific chief economist at IHS Market in Singapore.
This is always the problem in low-income countries where a lot of people are dependent on daily work and there's no government support. So I think this is the problem in places like Philippines, that you can't really keep people locked down for long periods of time because many have very little savings, if any.
Remote part of the Philippines, a group of some 7,100 islands, still report fewer cases. They can keep local economies on track because they get little traffic from Metro Manila or Cebu, the country's two most infected spots. We thank Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story, and as always, we invite you to stop by our website at voanews.com to see more on this and all the other stories we have on today's program. You can also follow us on our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all at VOA Asia. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary visits Taiwan. Huawei running out of smartphone chips under U.S. sanctions. Afghanistan to release 400 Taliban prisoners ahead of peace talks. India imposes import embargo on 101 military items. China seals off villages after bubonic plague deaths. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more when you make a visit to Facebook at VOA Asia and stop by our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Due to concerns about the spread of the coronavirus, a growing number of U.S. states are expanding options for voting by mail instead of in person for the November presidential election. Voting by mail has a long history in the United States dating back to the Civil War. However, President Donald Trump claims mail-in voting will lead to election fraud or months of uncertainty following the vote. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara reports on how a routine voting option is becoming a central political debate of the 2020 election.
Some New Yorkers braved the threat of coronavirus and voted in person in the June Democratic primary, but many voted by mail, flooding an unprepared election system. 6 weeks later, election results in some districts still haven't been called. President Donald Trump has repeatedly warned that if states rely on mail-in balloting for the November presidential poll, the same kind of delays could take place.
You won't know the election result for weeks, months, maybe years after. Maybe you'll never know the election result, and that's what I'm concerned with. It'll be fixed, it'll be rigged.
Election officials say voter fraud in the U.S. is extremely rare, even when it comes to mail-in voting. Most states allow voting by mail, but this year many expect they will need extra time to count the large number of ballots during the pandemic. It wouldn't be the first time U.S. election results are delayed. The controversial decision on the 2000 race between Al Gore and George W. Bush was delayed for more than a month because of recounts in Florida. The upcoming November poll could be even more controversial.
We're in a hyper-polarized environment right now, and so any window where a candidate can claim that there's some sort of, chicanery happening behind the scenes is a problem. The big problem this time is it's not just going to be one state. It's not going to be one Florida. I think that there are a good three or four, maybe five states where it could take that week.
While Trump has walked back his suggestion that the election should be delayed, he has continued to raise doubts and suspicion about mail-in voting.
If more of his supporters vote in person and he's ahead on election night, he could claim, as he's already suggested, that the mail-in ballots that are coming in are fraudulent and try and claim victory.
On Wednesday, Trump's campaign sued the state of Nevada, led by Democrats, over a plan to send mail-in ballots to all registered voters. But in the battleground state of Florida, led by Republicans, the president is encouraging voting by mail, saying its current and past governors cleaned up the state's election system, making it safe and secure.
The two governors, between the both of them, they've really got a great system of absentee ballots and even in the case of mail-in ballots.
Polls show more Americans want to vote by mail in November, but there's a growing divide about whether it's truly secure.
Democrats are much more likely than Republicans to say right now that they'd like to vote by mail.
Expanding the pool of voters participating in some states will help Biden. In others, such as Florida, it's expected to benefit Trump. Whoever wins, election analysts say the main challenge will be ensuring both parties see the result as credible. Patsy Whitaker-Suara, VOA News.
Coming up, we'll take a look at how the two presidential candidates are faring in the polls. Happening now in Asia, Indian investigators on Sunday began examining the black box of a Boeing 737 that overshot a runway on its second attempt, killing 18 people in the country's worst aviation accident in a decade. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We start off our week together on VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden is leading in the polls over incumbent President Donald Trump, but must rally and unite his party's progressive wing while appealing to the broader electorate if he hopes to win November's presidential election. The continuing coronavirus pandemic makes traditional campaigning difficult, and Biden campaign officials now say he will not travel to his party's convention that's going to be held in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to accept the presidential nomination. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports on the strengths and vulnerabilities of the man Democrats hope will win the White House.
It's an election year like few others. High unemployment, social unrest, and people facing the risk of infection from a raging pandemic. All factors contributing to President Donald Trump's poor polling performance in the battleground states where the November election may be decided. And the battleground is expanding to some traditional Republican strongholds. Good news for Joe Biden.
If you go back 10 years, I don't think you'd find many people saying that Arizona and Texas and even Georgia would be all that competitive.
But this year they are. Biden was Barack Obama's vice president and played a major role in his administration. Elected to the Senate at age 29, Biden is an experienced politician.
I'm going to say something outrageous. I know how to make government work.
He is someone who's been through great tragedies in his life with the death of his first wife and daughter in a car accident.
Then in 2015, he lost his oldest son, Beau, to cancer. His personal tragedies and his long tenure in politics are perhaps reasons why his political opponents find it hard to generate the same hostility as they did for the last Democratic nominee.
Crooked Hillary Clinton.
But even Biden supporters admit he lacks charisma, which might be a problem, say analysts.
He is bland, and the blandness normally would hurt him more than it does against Donald Trump. It actually gives people a very sharp, distinct choice.
Biden survived a bruising primary contest, beating a long list of presidential contenders.
Struggling against Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. That he truly is a moderate. He is not a radical left-wing thinker.
His choice of a running mate could expand his appeal.
It's not going to change large masses of voters, but it might make a difference at the margins.
Yet some voters say they are unhappy with the choice being offered in this election.
There are a group of voters that have since become labeled as haters, and they are voters who don't like either candidate for president, but feel they have to vote.
And in this unprecedented election, every vote is important. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Nagasaki marked the 75th anniversary of the U.S. atomic bombing of the city in a ceremony held at the grandiose peace statue, with the mayor and survivors urging world leaders to work for a ban on nuclear weapons. Nagasaki survivors stood in a minute of silence to honor the more than 70,000 people who died. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, South Asian women living in the United States with their immigrant husbands or male partners are a unique community. Their isolation and dependence have created a difficult situation for many of these women who are also trying to adjust to being outsiders in a Western country. VOA's Arama Bassi explores the story.
Anila is American Pakistani, a single mother living in the state of Virginia with her two daughters. Alina's family moved to the U.S. when she was just 9. She was married to a cousin who wanted to move to the U.S., and Anila was his route to a green card. She says he abused them.
I stood quiet. So the abuse was like there every single day. It's 24/7. He was my ex-husband. He was my first cousin as well. He was against the children's education. He was very clear that the children are not going to get any education here. He was very strict about why the books are being used in the house. I was not allowed to have any phone calls, conversation with my parents, with my siblings.
Anila says the abuse continued for 14 years until he abandoned them.
He left. That was the last time I saw. And then later on, the family members came and they told me that some of the family members gave me 24 hours to make a decision in their favors to leave everything here and then move back to Pakistan, where I refused. I really stood up for my daughters. I was like, as being a daughter, if I am not being supported here, there's no way that my children are going to be supported back home.
Anila took shelter at a state home and put her children in school. She now teaches Urdu language here in this nursery to almost 35 kids. She's also enrolled in a bachelor's program specializing in early childhood education. The group Sakhi for South Asian Women, an advocacy group, says 2 out of every 5 South Asian immigrant women in the U.S. are survivors of domestic violence.
While the situation is horrific for all the domestic violence victims, seeking help can be particularly challenging for South Asian women. Many women do not have any support system or are living away from their families and are not accustomed to calling police on their spouses.
Razia, a Bangladeshi, is sharing her story on the condition that she not be identified. At the age of 36, Razia got married and moved to New York, traveling for the first time in her life. She says she suffered mental and financial abuse for 2 years.
After our child was born, he just told me to leave. He called the police, as he had done before many times. Now I have moved to a shelter home, but I'm still going through a lot of hard times. I have a daily wage job, yet I haven't worked in days because my 2-year-old is sick. I don't know how long I can survive this.
Several organizations have reported an increase in the reports of domestic abuse during the coronavirus pandemic. And for South Asian immigrants, the isolation is compounded by language and cultural barriers.
A lot of these victims do not even understand that they're being abused. These are generations and generations of psychological brainwashing where they deem this to be normal.
It's a problem without easy answers, but advocates are urging the U.S. government to pass legislation that would give more financial and physical protection to female-dependent victims of abuse. Iram Abbasi, VOA News, Washington, D.C.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, 2 NASA astronauts safely landed back on Earth after a trip to the International Space Station. Their historic journey aboard a commercial craft marks SpaceX's first flight with a manned crew, raising hopes for future travel. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us The Week in Space.
Splashdown.
A busy summer of space travel came to a soft splashing end this week for astronauts Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley. It was the first splashdown by U.S. astronauts in 45 years.
Back on planet Earth.
As we descended through the atmosphere, the thrusters were firing almost continuously, and I think this the sound that makes. I did record some audio of it, but it doesn't sound like a machine. It sounds like an animal.
The reentry is a fairly dynamic event, and you can see from, you know, just an overall view of the capsule that reentry is a pretty demanding environment, you know, with the different scorches on the vehicle, and the windows were not spared any of that.
The two rode a SpaceX Dragon capsule to the ISS and back, marking the first such journey aboard a privately built and owned craft in the space station's 20-year history. The mission's success means another SpaceX crew launch could happen as early as next month, with possible tourist flights next year. Also this week, from Cape Canaveral in Florida, NASA launched Perseverance, its most elaborate life-seeking Mars rover. Research scientist Dr. Bethany Ellman explains the mission.
We will be able to, as before with rovers, drive up to rocks, investigate them, figure out which ones are the most interesting. But this time, we'll be able to then core a piece of that rock out into a sample about the size of a piece of chalk.
Stony Brook University professor Scott McLennan says to best study the samples collected by Perseverance, the rocks must land back on Earth.
They're the gift that keeps on giving, because the samples will remain. Our ability to make measurements will evolve. They'll get better and better over time, and we can always go back and revisit those samples that we've brought back to Earth.
The samples may hold clues as to whether life ever existed on the red planet. NASA and the European Space Agency will join forces to bring them back to Earth around 2031. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
In this time of COVID, one New York City mom has decided to transform the look of some children's books to reflect the new reality. Stephanie Trilling's project, called Children's Books for Pandemics, has gone viral on social media. Elena Wolf has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
It was like nothing he'd ever seen before.
Shira and Zachary both know the story about the bear who ate a sandwich by heart. That and dozens of other kids' stories that they read with their mom in the long months of lockdown. At least now they get to read outdoors.
The strangest thing that we encountered was, and it's going to sound like a very small thing, but in the mornings now, we're woken up by birds.
A lot has changed this summer, some things forever. Trilling confesses that she has changed as well, turning from a constantly busy lawyer to a stressed-out mom and an ironic illustrator.
I took out a paintbrush and I started painting the first thing I saw, which was a book cover of a book we'd read earlier that day. And I started painting the characters, and then I started painting pictures of what coronaviruses look like under the microscope. So my daughter looked over and she said, "Oh, wow, what is that?"
And that's how the project Children's Books for Pandemics began. Little Harold paints coronavirus purple, Little Engine is transporting PPE, and Frog and Toad keep their distance. Trilling is not rewriting kids' books, she is re-illustrating them.
Goodnight Moon was Goodnight Zoom. That one was one of the most popular ones I've done, I think because in switching from an environment where everyone is working in offices, working late nights, not at home, to one where everyone is home with their children, with anyone else whom they live with. It's a new environment, and all of our interactions with people outside of our immediate households.
By late July, Trilling has given a new look to about 100 children's books, gaining popularity on social media and gaining friends among the parents that agree the new normal asks for new books for the kids who are now living through the unusual pandemic experience.
In terms of returning to normal, I don't know what normal's going to be. It's not going to be what we left in February. On the micro level, at birthday parties, I don't think people are going to be blowing out candles anymore. I think that is a bygone thing, and our kids and our kids' kids are going to laugh when we tell them that, oh, we went to birthday parties and people blew germs all over the cake and then everyone ate it.
Trilling's viral work is going to outlive the pandemic. The U.S. Library of Congress considers them artifacts and has requested to have the originals in storage, something that documents a very peculiar era in American history. For Elena Wolf in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
We're happy to be able to share VOA Asia with you today. Thanks for joining us. You can continue by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and at our website, voanews.com, where you can download our full-length 25-minute programs. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.